Welcome back. Today we're talking about poison ivy, poison oak, and poison sumac. A hiker's nightmare, right? Or a gardener's nightmare, depending. But there's a lot of advice out there, and I think I've tried them all on how you get rid of poison oak, poison ivy. But, you know, poison sumac, I don't really have much experience with, so I can't really speak to that, but I think that these methods that we're going to talk about, or the one method toward the end of the show that I'm going to talk about, is still the best method for getting rid of anything that you really don't want to have. And we're going to talk about how to do it without all the herbicides and the poisons that a lot of people would use to do that. And really, it's not that effective. As a matter of fact, I have seen some doctors and some scientists say that poison ivy is getting especially resilient to these herbicides, like a lot of other things that we're seeing, that they're building a defense mechanism, I guess, into their DNA, and they're able to resist a lot of these herbicides, just like a lot of other pests are becoming resistant to the pesticides. So we're going to talk about that today. By the way, if you're new here, welcome to the Edible Gardens podcast, where we talk about how your edible garden can also be your beautiful landscape. I'm your host, Nanette Blair, and I'm so glad you found us. My dream is to make good food accessible to everyone, and in my opinion, the best definition of good food is nutritious, delicious, and safe. And it doesn't get any better than picking fresh fruit, herbs, veggies, straight off the plant, where you know what went into it from start to finish. And you won't find any tomato cages here. As a matter of fact, there's a lot you won't find here. Just like we talked about at the beginning of this show, you won't find any pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, or any of the other sides. But what you will find here are landscapes that are designed for beauty, fun, reflection, entertaining, and the list goes on to whatever you want, because it's your home, your yard, and your taste, and beauty truly is in the eye of the beholder. Okay, you know that garden you've been thinking about? Well, I know you're ready. I know I'm ready. So let's dig in. Okay, here's what I've learned. Poison oak, poison ivy, and like I said, I don't have a lot of experience with poison sumac, but I am going to be posting a picture of what all three of these look like in the show notes. So you'll want to be sure to click on the show notes, and if you don't know what they look like, then you can go and see a picture of them. Okay, so I have been very fortunate in my life. I have not suffered much from poison oak or poison ivy, or the chemical in it that causes all the problems is called urushiol, or some people will say urushiol. It's urushiol. And I am going to be posting a video from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and they go into a really good definition of, you know, what happens when it gets on your skin and how it affects your skin and the best way to treat it and things like that. But I can't imagine doing a better job than they did. I would just be repeating what they say. So I am going to put a link in the show notes on a video that shows it in a very simple way. It's kind of like poison oak for dummies, or poison ivy for dummies, or urushiol for dummies. But you can go watch that video, and it's really informative of how it works. So I think the reason that I have not had too many problems with it is because I've been able to avoid it, because I know what it looks like. I have been affected by it in the past, so I don't really know that I buy into the whole theory of some people are just not allergic to it, because it's an oil that gets on your skin and your body doesn't like it, and your body tries to fight it. So if you get it on your skin, and I've heard people say, well, I didn't think I was allergic to it. I worked around it for years and years, and then all of a sudden I'm allergic to it. So there's something about you can either build up a defense mechanism or your defense mechanism gets worn down after a while, and then you will break out. So if you have someone or it's you yourself that's saying, I'm not affected by it, you might want to just really be careful anyway, just in case, because there are stories out there of people saying, I never was affected by it, and then I got it. And I know I have gotten it at least once in my life. It was awful. I was miserable. It was terrible. So I don't know that I buy into that whole I'm just not allergic to it thing. I think maybe you can be resistant to it, but not immune to it. But I know my husband can just be in the same state as it, and he will get it. It can just be somewhere in the vicinity, and he will get it. You know, if there's something that I know needs to be done, I'll tell him, don't do that, I'll do it. And I don't know if it's just that he's just not as careful. I don't know, but he will break out like nobody's business. He just becomes one big rash or one big blister. I think that it's just because I am really careful. I have a real respect for just avoiding it. And just, I know what it looks like. One of the things that our doctor told us, I really do encourage you to go watch this video from the CDC that I'm going to put in the show notes. But I know one time that our doctor told us, be careful because that oil gets in your shoestrings. And then when you go to, or it could get under your fingernails. And when you go to tie your shoes, maybe you've gotten completely rid of it. And then you get it again, but you say, oh my gosh, I haven't even been around it. I haven't even been in the woods. I haven't done anything. Well, maybe it's in your shoestrings. So that oil can live on your shoestrings for a very long time. We're talking years. So if you wore a pair of tennis shoes and you were doing something and you were around poison ivy and you broke out and you completely recovered from it, and you put those shoes in your closet and didn't pull them out again for a couple of years and you didn't live anywhere in the country, you didn't take a hike, you didn't do anything, but you tied your shoes and then you touched your face, you scratched your arm, you did whatever, you can spread it that way as well. So I would just be mindful of that kind of activity. Also, if you're using any kind of tools, if you're driving in the woods, a tire, on a lawnmower, on a vehicle, on a tractor, and you were crushing up that urushiol and it got on the tire, and this stuff is oily. Like, I would imagine something like mechanical type grease, you know, where you get that black grease on there. When you wash your body, if you know that you got into it and you go wash it off right away, some people will say within a few hours. I would say you need to do it probably as quickly as you realize that you've gotten into it or that it's touched your skin. But you have to basically dissolve those oils. So you have to get the oils off. And I don't know that I would really scrub. I wouldn't scrub with like a wash rag. I would do something that's going to really dissolve those oils. So if you imagine, just picture that you have mechanic grease on you and you wash your hands once with Dawn dish soap. And a lot of people say Dawn dish soap is one of the best things that you can use, but it's anything that's going to be like a degreaser. So it's not like you're just trying to wash your hands after you went to the restroom or wash your hands after you got something sticky on your hands. This is something that's oily. So you're going to want to wash it off probably two or three times or three or four times, however much you need to do it where you feel comfortable because you know you don't want to get it. That's the way you need to think about, you know, how you're going to get it off of you. So that would be my advice, but just think of it as like a greasy thing that's hard to get off your skin. But that's not really what the show is about. The show is about how you're going to get rid of it. Okay, so a lot of people will say a lot of things, and I've tried a lot of these things that people have said, and I'm going to tell you all the things that I've tried, and I'm going to tell you why I think it's the best way or not the best way. So number one, I would not burn it. So if you are trimming limbs or you're burning leaves and you know there's poison ivy in there, do not burn it because we had a fire one time. We were living, we actually used to live at a Christian camp, a summer camp, where the kids would come for the summer and go to camp. And there was a huge fire, and I don't know how it got started or anything, but there was poison ivy in this fire. Someone got it really bad. I don't remember if it was my husband or who it was, but this was like acres and acres, maybe hundreds of acres of fire, and everybody, it was all hands on deck. We were all trying to put it out. We were doing everything that we could, and then there was like probably five or six different volunteer fire departments that were there. And someone got it really, really bad, and the doctor told them that you can inhale it. And so it's not just a matter of contact dermatitis, you know, where you get something on your skin and then you get a rash. You can also inhale the oils and it can get into your lungs and then into your system. And if you go watch this video from the CDC, it explains how it works and, you know, how your body gets it out of your system. And that's why you get this blistery rash. So burning it, just don't do it. I would say there's no question about whether or not that works. It just don't do it. It's just a really not a good thing for humans to experience. Another thing that a lot of people say is pour boiling water on the plant. Okay, so it depends on what stage of growth this plant is in for you. Sometimes it shows up as just kind of like this little herbaceous plant or a little bitty vine. If it was in that stage of growth, just really small, it hasn't had time to really establish a deep root system or anything, you probably could pour boiling water on it and it probably would kill it. But when you do that, that is a natural kind of herbicide, right? So anything that's or it's actually a natural kind of pesticide as well. So if you pour boiling water, and I've heard a lot of people say this, you pour boiling water on poison ivy, it has to be a really small plant. I would say something that was just a few inches tall, maybe to 6 inches tall, where that would even be effective. But you're going to kill all that microbiology that's in the soil there as well. You want that microbiology to not go into shock in any way. I mean, if you care about the soil, you don't want to put any kind of toxins on it, like poisons, like Roundup or something like that, right? So if you care about the soil, you wouldn't want to kill all that biology that's in the soil. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, I just want to get rid of the poison ivy. That's all I care about. My son broke out into a terrible rash. He's only 2 years old. It was horrible. And I'm sure that's true, but there is a better way. And I am going to get to that by the end of the show for sure. But in that state, you could just get a Ziploc bag, put it over your hand, reach down, pull that, or a Walmart sack, something that's going to be thick, and put it over, kind of like turn it inside out, put the whole thing over your hand, pull it up by the roots, pull the bag inside out, you know, where it's all covering that plant, and then throw the whole thing away. I would do that over pouring boiling water over the roots. And there's a lot of reasons why I say this. Now, I will tell you, I guess right here is as good a time as any. I really believe, now that I know what I know about all the different niches in the forest, there is a reason that there's poison ivy there. I believe that God, in his infinite wisdom, didn't make any mistakes. You know, and this we're talking about what's natural in a natural system. We're not talking about genetically modified organisms. We're talking about something that was put there by nature, was put there by God. And there are reasons, and I kind of looked into this because I was curious, what is this purpose that this plant that's such a noxious weed for humans to experience, why is it there? And if you think about it, there's a lot of things that a lot of people are allergic to, right? Some people may be allergic to lavender, which I could just bathe in it. I love the stuff. But some people might break out into a horrific rash if they eat it or put it on their skin. That's not the case for me, but it could be for some people. I'm not allergic to peanuts, but some people are allergic to peanuts. I'm not allergic to sunflower seeds, but someone might be allergic to sunflower seeds. I'm not allergic to gluten, but some people are allergic to gluten. So everybody has something that they're allergic to. Well, when I looked this up, and I've heard this before, and I really questioned, why can you turn a herd of goats loose on poison ivy and it doesn't affect them the way that it affects us humans? You know, I don't know if it has something to do with just our skin or what, but there's a lot of animals that feed on poison oak, poison ivy, poison sumac, and it doesn't affect them one bit. As a matter of fact, if you are trying to completely eradicate these noxious weeds, they're noxious to us, from your yard forever and ever and ever, amen, that's probably not going to happen, because if there's any poison sumac, poison ivy, poison oak around you whatsoever, the birds feed on that. That is a source of nutrition for them. They'll feed on the berries. They eat the berries. They digest the berries. They fly over and they poop the berries out. Okay, so that's how it spreads. And that is why I say it doesn't have a place like where we sit. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, for my purposes, I know that I have it growing out in the acreage behind our property where we don't garden, where I will go take a walk through the woods. I made myself a little path, but I'm going to let it grow there. It's a good forage plant for deer, which we have living on the back of our property. It's a good forage plant for squirrels and birds and rabbits and the wildlife that's around. Now, am I saying that, oh my God, you should never kill poison ivy? No, I am not saying that. As a matter of fact, I am going to give you a really good remedy here in just a few minutes, or how you can get rid of it without the toxins. But I just don't worry. If I see poison ivy, I'm just going to say, I teach my grandkids, that's poison ivy. Don't touch that. If it's something that is really bothering you and it's in a place that you just really don't want it, but just imagine, I'm going to go back to the whole boiling water thing because a lot of people say this. If it is not just a few inches tall and it's really, really tall, how many times are you going to have to go in and go out and go in and go out and carry in a bucket of boiling water? First of all, that's not safe to carry a bucket of boiling water. Second of all, it's just not effective. It just doesn't work unless the plant is just a few inches tall. And by the time we see it, it's usually growing up a tree or it's in a whole big patch by your blackberries. And the other thing is that people will say, you know, you can use Roundup, which really doesn't work. It really doesn't. And it is going to kill the soil in underneath your soil. You're not going to be able to plant anything there. Okay, so this is what I would do. And I do have some more to say on this subject, but this is what I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. This is what I would do. This is what I have found to be the most effective. If you really must get rid of it, then I would say buy you a box of those contractor bags. They don't cost any more than Roundup does. And make sure that the thick ones, not just a trash bag from the house, but something you know is not going to puncture or be able to rub a hole in it as you're pulling. Because what I want you to do is get one of these big, and they're very, very thick plastic bags, and they're called contractor bags. And this is something that we use when we're remodeling the house and we're putting in old wood or tile floors or sheetrock or things with nails in them. You know, these are real heavy duty bags. So you put the whole bag, you open it up and you put the whole bag over the plant and you get the whole thing. And, you know, you can just kind of pull it over the top and bring it down. Now, I will say, you know, people will also say wear latex gloves, whether it's latex or whatever, you know, the non-latex kind, whatever. the disposable kind, but I would say I don't even trust that, because if you wear long sleeves and you have on these disposable latex gloves, you're going to have a chink in the armor right there where your wrist is, and something's going to get down in there. I would go buy, and this I have done this before, go buy those dishwashing gloves, the kind that you would clean the toilet with, or you know, the ones that are long, and I would pull those either up over your sleeves. I would do long sleeves, and then I would either pull them up over your sleeves or pull your sleeves down over the gloves, so you don't have that exposed area right there where your wrist is. I don't know. It depends on how thick your patch of poison ivy is, but I would just go put this big, thick, plastic, heavy-duty bag over the whole plant, and then I would pull it out by the roots at the base, at where it's coming out of the ground. Now, if it's really established, then you might want to get like a broad fork or a garden fork, and then just loosen that soil around there and just pull out as much of the root as you can. And that's how I would get rid of the poison ivy that's there. And you might have to use that whole box, depending on how much poison ivy you have, for each plant. So it's up to you. You could probably reuse that bag, just, you know, somehow without touching it, keep pushing that poison ivy up into the bag, and then put it over another plant and pull some more up if you want to, you know, not use the whole box of bags. But anyway, that's the way that my highest recommendation on how to get rid of it without spraying any kind of herbicides. Okay, so now I want to go back to what else poison ivy is good for. I'm going to kind of jump around on you here a little bit. So the deer and the squirrels and the rabbits and, you know, lots of other, and goats, they'll eat it. So that is another thing that you can do. If you're not in a city lot and block, and you can't stake a goat to the poison ivy patch, if you're living out in the country somewhere, I remember having a conversation. I was thinking about buying some goats. I was talking to the goat lady, and she was saying, oh yeah, it doesn't affect them the way that it affects us. If you want to clean everything up, you can hire someone to bring in their herd of goats, or you can buy a herd of your own and just let them loose, and they'll eat everything that they can reach. And so you can get rid of the briars that way. You can get rid of the poison oak, the poison ivy. Basically, they'll just eat everything they can reach. And it kind of, what they'll say in landscaping terms, it raises the skirt of the forest. So it just raises everything up, and it'll just make it look like a park there underneath. Now, if you do that, you're affecting the ecosystem a little bit. So it depends on what you're trying to do with that property or with that area that you're having them clean up. So believe me, I have thought about this, and they'll eat briars, they'll eat everything that they can eat, but that's one more option if you have a big area that you're trying to control. And they'll bring out their own fences, and they'll may even bring out their own dog that watches the herd and protects them from coyotes while they're in that area, and they'll just bring them in and they'll just clean everything up for you. But again, just don't think that there's not the possibility that it won't come back, because it will come back, because your neighbor has it a mile away, and a bird can fly a mile away and poop a poison ivy berry seed on your property. And we know that the forest has all these different layers in ecological succession. Everything has been sent in for a reason. And what poison ivy and poison oak, poison sumac, these are all in the edge niche, right? So they like to grow up against the support of or under the protection of other trees or structures, like a house or a barn or something where it's going to get a little bit of protection. It always grows on the edge. And one of the really cool things that I have found through doing my research that I've been looking into this is that nature always puts the antidote for whatever it is you you are having a problem with somewhere nearby. But I have found like jewelweed. Jewelweed is one of those things that when I started kind of really getting excited about this and getting into it, I was talking to my son about it. And I said, have you ever heard of jewelweed? He knew exactly what that was. He was like, oh yeah. When he was doing surveying and the guys were doing the machete work. And if you've never seen anybody do a survey on a big piece of property, they basically, some guy is shooting a sight thingy. I don't know what it's called. And they're trying to find the line of the property lines. Somebody has to go in there with a machete or something and clear that path so that they can get, so they can do the survey, right? So all of these guys that were doing all this machete work and chainsaw work, he said they would just cover themselves in that jewelweed lotion before they went out into the property. So I have found that jewelweed, now it doesn't grow everywhere. And I did buy some seeds one time and I didn't plant them soon enough. And I'm so upset with that. But that's one of the things that I'm looking to put into my system is some jewelweed. Impatiens capensis. Anyway, I found this really cool article that is a scientific paper that was written on the effectiveness. It's called, I'm reading from the paper right now, the effectiveness of jewelweed impatiens capensis. Also something called impatiens balsamina. They call ethnopharmacological relevance, or they call it ethnobotanical use. And basically what this is, and I was so excited to see this word. This is a new word to me. I never heard it before, but it makes sense. You know, what are the wives' tales around, or what's the mythology, what's the history around what this plant has been used for in the past? So in this paper, they were talking about how the Native Americans and the Eastern medicine and Midwestern Native Americans, they used this plant, jewelweed, and then some other plants from the balsam family that would keep them from getting poison ivy. And so they actually did a paper on it because the science community was saying, oh, that's just a bunch of wives' tales. There's no science. There's no data. You know, I'm the girl that's always saying, show me the data. So I was really excited to find this paper, and I'm going to put it in the show notes as well so that you can see what this paper says. So they were saying, basically, when you read a paper like this, they're going to have an abstract on what they're trying to do. And they're going to show the methodologies that they use and the results and the conclusion. And so basically what they were saying was that jewelweed was effective in preventing the development. So this is what I would call a blocker. You can also buy stuff over the counter that's called ivy blocker. I believe that's what it's called. I think we have some in our bathroom because my husband, he'll go out and do the weed eating and stuff, but he doesn't put that stuff on before he goes out. But they were saying that you need to be able to mash it up and put it on your skin, and that the extracts were not as effective. Well, that kind of goes back to what we've talked about before, right? Reductionism, which basically means reducing it down to what they find in a scientific formula or trial is the effective constituent of that plant. So what chemical in that plant is it that makes your body like a coat of armor against your shawl? Well, when they do that, what else is in there that they're not even looking at? So they were saying that if you take it and you mash it up and you put it on you, it's more effective than if you have an extract. And washing it off afterward with any kind of soap, it doesn't have to be jewelweed, any kind of soap is the best remedy. That was what they found in the people that they actually volunteered. Can you believe anybody volunteered for the study? What they found is that washing it off with something that will dissolve the oil was the most effective. But I just think it's so cool. And I actually, you know, that nature would put the antidote to whatever's there right beside it. Another thing that I had seen a long time ago, and I tried to find this video, some information on this, and I cannot find it. So this would be one of those things where I would say, look into it for yourself. I do not know enough about it, but they were saying Virginia creeper was one of those things that was a potential antidote for poison ivy. Well, when you think about it, Virginia creeper always grows next to poison ivy. Almost always, always, always. As a matter of fact, a lot of people get Virginia creeper confused with poison ivy. And so this is what I've always told my grandkids or anybody that I know if we're walking around out in the woods. There's five, it's fine. If there's three, you flee. So they're talking about the leaves. If there's five leaves, it's fine and it's not poison ivy. If there's three, you flee. That means it is poison ivy and to stay away from it. Well, you know how we were talking about earlier that everybody's allergic to different things. Everybody's got a different chemical makeup. Everybody's got a different biology. And for whatever reason, some people are allergic to things that other people aren't allergic to. And Virginia creeper is one of those things that you need to kind of, like, if you find yourself in a survival type situation and you want something that's going to counteract poison ivy or the urushiol in poison ivy, urushiol, however you want to pronounce it. I've heard it pronounced both ways, so don't call me and tell me I'm wrong. If you were to rub that on you first and then go out where you know there's poison ivy, this is what this little old man was saying, and this goes back to that ethnobotanical or ethnopharmacological relevance. That's something that's an old wives' tale. That's something that it's an old man's tale, however you want to look at it. That, you know, I usually find where there's smoke, there's fire. For some people, it may really work. For some people, it may not work. I would say with whatever it is you're going to try, try a little spot first. And I did that. I crushed up the Virginia creeper really fine in my hand and made it kind of juicy. And I rubbed it on a little spot on my ankle. And I didn't break out. I was fine. And so I know that it would work for me. Again, there's, you know, you get those chinks in the armor. Have you ever put on sunscreen just to find that there was one little patch there that you didn't get? You know, one little patch that you missed with the sunscreen, and you just had this red sunburn somewhere on you. Well, it could be the same with that. So I would say that all in all, in the best way to get rid of it is just to put the black really thick, not anything thin, and put that black big, because they're really, really big too. They're the biggest trash bags you can find. Put that whole thing over the plant, use a broad fork or a garden fork if you have to, loosen up those roots and just pull the whole thing out by the roots. If it's someplace where you just cannot have it, like around your seating area or your porch or where the kids play ball, wherever it is, that would be my own experience speaking there. And then the other thing that I would say is if you've got it out in the woods, don't worry about it. The deer are going to eat it. The birds are going to eat it. Just know what it looks like. Teach your kids what it looks like. Teach your visitors what it looks like so that you don't have someone say, oh my gosh, I just came from your house last week and I have poison ivy all over me. Because that's, you know, that hurts when someone tells you that they got it from a place that you have. But maybe even make a plant marker that says, this is poison ivy right here with the skull and crossbones on it. And, you know, I just don't try to get rid of all of it unless it's in a place where I know my family, my friends are going to be, and I don't want it there. So, and be sure to read that or look at the video about what the CDC says and what this, this paper was written by someone from the United States National Library of Medicine, National Institute of Health. So this is a very scientific paper. So another thing that I thought was really cool is it comes from the impatient family, and these other plants that they're talking about, but there's just a whole list of them here. And a lot of them come from the balsam family and the sopanid family. I would highly recommend that you look up sopanins. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. I'm not looking at my notes right now. I'm actually looking at this. But it is something, it's a plant that makes soap. And when I went through, and I'm going to do next week, we're going to have a show on how to do plant identification, or how I do plant identification. And it was really cool because out in the woods, I found a tree that's called the soapberry tree, and that's what the Native Americans used to use to make soap. So if you have something that, you know, you just want to look into it for the purpose of creating a well-rounded plant folio. And again, this is a really good reason why we do those plant folios that we talked about back in episode, what was that episode? It's episode 23, how and why I create a plant folio. And you know, that's one of those things where I say, do as I say, not as I do, because I don't always do them. But every time I want to know something that I have looked up and I did not write it down, I'm always sorry that I didn't. I'm like, man, I need to do that. So anyway, just identifying the stuff that you have on your property and knowing what poison ivy looks like, I would say that's a big deal. You really want to know what poison ivy looks like. Even if it's not growing on your property, if you're going somewhere out in the woods or somewhere that's remotely out in nature, I would say it's a good idea to teach your children, your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad. If they don't know what poison ivy looks like, this is something that I think everybody should know what poison ivy, poison oak, and poison sumac looks like. And I am going to provide some links for what poison sumac looks like, because I don't have any anywhere here on my property that I know of. I just don't have that much experience with poison sumac. It hasn't been a big deal for me. But poison oak and poison ivy we have. So anyway, yeah, so I looked up soponins before I did this show, just because I was curious, what are some other trees? I know I have soapberry here, but some other well-known species include citrus, maples, chestnuts, lichens, mangoes, cashews, frankincense, myrrh, mahogany, and neem. And recently I looked up frankincense because this is an essential oil, and I just think that it's really so interesting because it was one of the gifts that they brought, that the kings or the wise men brought to baby Jesus, was frankincense and myrrh. And I had some frankincense incense that I bought one year around Christmas time, and I really didn't know that much about it. And since then, I found that it's this really cool tree. And how you use it, it's actually the sap that's ground down into a powder, and how they make that into an essential oil. But frankincense is a really, really beneficial essence, or an herb. I don't know what they call it. It's a spice, an herb. It's actually neither one, but it's really, really cool. I highly recommend that you look into some of these plants that have these soap qualities in them, because you never know. It would just be kind of cool. I like to have stuff like that just kind of as a conversation thing. But yeah, that's my frankincense tree. Oh, why do you have frankincense? Oh, I don't know, because I want to. You know, it's actually not called a frankincense tree. It's called something else. But that's one of those things that's on my wish list now, because you know how I said back on the wish list, which I think is the one right before, maybe it was episode 21, how to prioritize which plants you're going to plant when. I said in that episode that this is an ever-evolving list. This list will never end because you're always going to be adding to it. Well, frankincense really is something that's never been on my radar until now. So anyway, when dealing with poison ivy avoidance, or just how to avoid it, number one is being able to identifying and knowing what it looks like. Number two is not touching items that have been in contact with those urushiol oils, like tires, rakes, gloves, shoes. Another thing to take into consideration is to maybe wear some kind of a blocker. I know if I'm going to be dealing with poison ivy, even if it's hot outside, I'll wear a really loose long sleeve shirt. Or even if it's something that's just going to irritate my skin, it might be cedar. If we're out trimming juniper or cedar trees, I know that that stuff makes me itchy. So I wear long sleeves. Sometimes I do hang stuff that has fiberglass in it. Insulation. I don't like it. It's not my favorite thing. I don't like to pay somebody to do that stuff for me. My husband and I will do it together, or I can do it by myself now. I know how to do it. And I hate that stuff. Oh my gosh, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. I will always wear long sleeves. I would never wear a t-shirt to do something like that because I want to just take it off and put it right into the washing machine and just get rid of it. So that's another thing that I do. If I know that I'm working around poison ivy, even if it doesn't really affect me as much as it affects my husband, it's still, I don't want him to touch anything that might have it on there. Strip at the washing machine, throw everything in the washing machine, and wash everything right away. So it's not having to be handled. Because you know, when you come in the house, you don't have your gloves on like you did when you were outside. So that's another little tip, is when you know that you've been around it, so nobody has to touch it again. It's just been touched that one time. You go wash your hands, you go shower, whatever you're doing. And then you just don't have to worry about it anymore. You might even want to wash those clothes twice if you're really, really nervous about it, which I know some people are just so affected by it, and I feel so bad for them. Just keep in mind that the birds may bring in another seed and you may have another poison ivy plant, even if you got every single root out. And that's why I think a lot of people want to do the boiling water, is they think they're going to kill all the roots in the soil. Even if you got every little fibrous hair of root out of the ground and there's no chance that it could grow again in that place, a bird's going to come in and just bring in more poison ivy for you at some point in time. So anyway, that's poison ivy, and that will do it for this episode. If you want to hear more about how to grow your own food in a beautiful landscape, then be sure to click that subscribe button. And better yet, I would love to hear from you. Once you've had a chance to listen, I'm curious which part of this episode resonated most for you and why. And I'm going to put this in the show notes as well, but you can contact me at Nanette@edifulgardens.com. And it's spelled just like the cover art. It's Nanette. And this is where I will post on every episode any of the links that we talk about in the show notes. And be sure to join us next week on the Edible Gardens podcast. And remember, this podcast is dedicated to you so that we can all put good food on the table. Until next time, bye for now.